This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Woohoo! It's Tuesday.
Dave's excited every day. He loves this time of year, apparently. Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne.
Hey.
And this is the spot where we talk about local issues, ideas, institutions, and individuals. And today, it's Tuesday, so we have the good fortune of having the mayor here before he goes on vacation for a little bit.
Yeah.
Talk about what's going on with the Salem City Council and other things of import in his life. Welcome back to the studio.
Well, thank you.
It's
appreciate
nice
it.
To have you. It's a great day. I love this time of year, even though it was really, really foggy, little damp, little icy in spots.
A little dicey
in spots. And the days are way too short. But,
yes.
You know, people are in a good mood. Hopefully, if they're not too stressed. You don't look too stressed, Mayor.
I'm not.
So we get to hopefully spend more time with family, a little less time in the office this time of year.
Yeah.
Hey, so tell us what happened last night.
Well, we had a city council and urban renewal agency meeting last night, and probably the big issue facing the council was a final vote on a camping ban and essentially a sidewalk behavior.
So this was the second reading?
Second reading, yeah, which puts it into effect.
Gotcha. And immediately, of course.
The council made some changes to it.
Oh, good.
They have passed a camping ban, but added language that said you can camp only where the city authorizes you to camp.
Wow.
And then there was a second motion from Councillor Nordyke, and then a second motion. Well, there was a second and a third motion, actually, along the way. It will go into effect December 16th, so there's 2 weeks before it goes into effect. And then Councillor Anderson proposed a motion that passed that asked the city staff to pull together a list of sites that the city owns, and for the council to consider for a potential city-authorized camp spot for people dislocated by the camping ban. And that is to be delivered next week. The council meets again on the 9th, and the council will consider what the staff returns with. The most likely sites will be in city parks. The city doesn't own a lot of property other than city parks or potential parks, and so they'll be looking at sites around town.
Do you think that there's going to be areas around town that the city owns property that somebody won't say, not in my neighborhood?
No, I really don't expect that. I think that any site that's chosen is going to be controversial.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the plan, as I understood it from councilors, really is to try to have an alternative location. And those would be cited with a time limit on how long people could camp there. I think they would maybe open a site and say it'll be open for 2 months, and then we'll move it around or continue it. And then we also got a report from Brady Rogers, who is our code enforcement and health officer. He described his experiences at the site over by the Arches location at Union and Commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And he has concluded that it is a public nuisance.
Yeah.
And he's going to be citing that and having it cleared, I think, over the next several days. That is really a separate issue. I know that a lot of folks, because there's over 50 tents down in that location on both sides of Commercial. But he described a situation that really is hazardous to human health as well as hazardous in the community, people running back and forth across Commercial Street and a batch of and blocking the sidewalks and other issues there, and that'll be dealt with separately. That really is an area that the council does not wander into when the code enforcement folks go in and cite an area and have it cleared.
I went through there yesterday.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
There's three times as many tents as there was a month ago.
It's pretty eye-dropping.
Yeah.
I was thinking about you, Mayor, is on Front Street. And it was behind the block that has Union Gospel and it's near the bridge. And the mayor was talking in previous weeks about actual structures. And this thing looked like one of those 10 by 10 easy ups, right? And it's completely enclosed. It's like a micro apartment right there in the right of way of the city. It's like, hey, this is my new micro house. And
wow.
And those would become illegal under this and would be cleared.
So what's... Okay, so tent camping is not permitted except for this, where the city says it is.
Yeah, that's correct.
Obviously, the downtown core and that area and Riverfront Park is not an area that's authorized. Are there areas where camping's authorized today?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
So this will be
what about
new
the behavior
sites.
Issues? Because we went from sit lie, no, we're not going to do sit lie, to antisocial behavior.
Those are illegal anyway, depending on what the behavior is. I mean, fighting is ill, you know, those are actual infractions, shooting up drugs, defecating or urinating in public. All of those are already illegal in Salem. So those would be part of those are not really subject to the camping issue, although... It's hard to separate all these pieces. The real argument, I think, that was made in favor of the sit lie, the anti-camping, and all the rest of it was really it has to do with the behaviors associated with this kind of large camping. And certainly what Mr. Rogers reported to us yesterday indicates that there are also that level of infractions going on. So it's kind of a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. It all kind of runs together, and I think that's probably the most difficult part of it. The discussion would indicate that the council is going to be looking for a more monitored site that would include social services as well as porta potties and other services.
Has this something that Portland has tried?
It's like been tried in other communities, yeah, and we're not getting really good reports. The question, too, is how many of these tents can you take care of in a campsite? In talking with the city manager, the indications are best practices would indicate probably 6 to 12 tents is about the size of a campsite that can really be handled. I think the council has a larger campsite in mind, and it'll be interesting to see how this works. Plus, there's going to be costs associated with this.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah, because the city really is not structured to set this up in terms of the monitoring and management of the site. We don't have the right personnel mix. This is not a traditional city service. So,
have they thought about asking the county? Well, it's their job.
Well, it in part, but really what they'll probably do is work with one of the local nonprofits, whether it's Arches or UGM or United Way, one of the more social service nonprofits to operate it. And if you'll recall, we worked last couple of years on trying to set up a sobering center for about 10 people. And while we're getting it built, we were able to raise the capital funds to pay for it with the help of the state and the city and others. at the Arches location, what we ran into was the cost of the personnel for an activity like that. We were unable to find the right funding that would staff it 24/7. And that'll be I think that's going to be one of the real challenges, is how will this be paid for? Who'll pay for it? Who'll be the contractor that actually handles this? It's got, you know, there's a lot of steps from here to there. Time frame.
Steps and moving parts.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to ask the mayor how he feels about the discourse happening in the city council. We've talked about this on Newsmakers a little bit, and we live in a world where somebody disagrees with you, they think evil things about you.
Mm-hmm.
Or the one that I find particularly offensive with this topic is, if you don't agree with me with what to do with the homeless, I'm going to label you as not compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to label this, if we have a different solution in mind, maybe you just don't care about people. Dave Bourne, I'm ashamed of you.
Slap
Stick
around.
With us. We're going to touch on that when we get back. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne. In the studio with us is the mayor of Salem. He is paid richly for his efforts in volunteering to work nearly full-time on behalf of the citizens. Appreciate that, and we appreciate the time he spends with KYKN so that you guys who are consumers of local radio can be well-informed. We were talking before the break about this measure, which has taken many permutations. Mayor, it seems like the one you passed moved forward is almost a gut and stuff, to use a legislative term, because it's not how it's set out. It is a sit lie and not exactly how you set out and so forth. But now we basically have a camping ban and looking at redirecting homeless or finding a home. Now the city is the job of being landlord for a homeless encampment, which to me, you know, is rife with opportunities for a little bit of abuse. Because where do you draw the line between somebody who is homeless and needs services and someone who is just free camping?
Mm-hmm.
But also liability. Because, you know, the city can provide these services and something happens, then they sue the city for trying to help them if something doesn't go
right. That's not right.
Just look at the lawsuit was filed against a school because somebody had an accident in the tunnel, and I don't know about the merits of that case, but when somebody gets hurt anywhere in America, they find a lawyer.
Disclaimer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe somebody doesn't get medical care in prompt enough time, and then they'll sue the city because they didn't put it close enough to the hospital or the whole nine yards. So
they need to send a disclaimer.
No, these are you're looking at a variety of issues that are going to be associated with the city getting into this activity. It's one that I haven't supported, but it's one the council, it's clearly the direction the council is going to take. And I think my job and the job of all the councilors is going to be to deal with each of these questions. And I think the real test is going to be how the council addresses, whether it's liability or it's how to deal with the porta potties. In the past, we've tried porta potties in various parts of town, ourselves and nonprofits, and what we found is that they become centers for drug use, prostitution. They've been burned. They've been pushed over. I mean, there are a lot of the whole idea of why don't you put a porta potty has a lot of other things that go with it. Yeah. And I think whenever you look at an issue like this, you have to look at all the elements associated with it, which is what I think makes the time frame extraordinarily aggressive, and whether or not our staff will be able to produce information that the council will be able to respond to and respond to successfully I think is going to be a real challenge, but we'll know in a week, less than a week now, 6 days. So I assume the city manager is busy on this issue right now. Now, we've done this before. About 4 or 5 years ago, the city was approached by a group asking for this kind of location by the city for them to set up a tent camp, and really were unable to identify properties that really fit the bill. And part of it was a real inclination not to use city parks, which are really designed for other purposes and really need to be open to all of the public. And I think that will be one of the challenges, because really the larger properties the city owns are the city parks. So
and then,
now,
of course,
people,
I would say maybe whatever the solution is, it has to be in cooperation with the nonprofits, with the county, you know, health and social services, so that people can get there.
Yeah.
Right. And
to
serve the needs
tough.
Of the population. And, you know,
and
we
chariots. I mean, you're really going to need to
services.
Have bus services. You're going to have a whole range of services available. Mm. And again, remember, the city does police, fire, parks, library, water, sewer.
Roads, yeah.
And roads. And it is not really set up. We do have, as you know, a fund that we provide about $500,000 to local social service agencies, the concept being that that's then leveraged with other private and other public funds to provide services for whether it's a battered women, health, you know, other
youth.
Kinds of sheltering spaces.
So as I was saying before the break, Mayor, how's the discourse? How's the demeanor of the group as you discuss and sometimes debate this issue that is the number one issue for Salemites?
Well, it's I think really among the councilors, it's reasonably respectful. Nobody accuses anybody of being Scrooge or any of that. The public that comes in has a different approach, which is really, if you don't do it my way, you're heartless, you're not compassionate, you don't understand, you're all a bunch of rich people who don't understand what it's like to be homeless or what it's like to be poor. I think there's the police chief talked about it, and I talked with the city manager about it as well. This is what's happening is we are condensing the homeless population down to really difficult people to house in various kinds of housing because of a range of behaviors or records or other factors, and it becomes increasingly difficult to find housing. As you know, we have the largest Housing First program in the state through our Housing Rental Assistance Program we set up about 3 years ago. We're housing about 230 of the really hardest to house. These are people who've been on the streets for about 10 years. They've got a whole range of issues, and it's done through private landlords, and it has been, like I say, really pretty successful. We've got about 230 people in the program, and they're now graduating out of it into different, whether it's personal or other kinds of subsidized housing. But we're also starting to see issues inside of who we're bringing into the program. They're increasingly difficult to keep in housing. And then we're going to have, we were pretty much assured, a number of folks who just don't want to be subject to any rules or any requirements or being approached for social or health services. And how that group will respond is going to be another part of the issue. Will there still be a group of folks that want to live in a tent separated from others? And I don't think it will solve the problem. I think it will help. at least in terms of if we can find the right spot with the right social services, with the all the other amenities that are going to be required, it will certainly help a certain group inside the homeless community. But this is a very complicated problem. It tends to be individualized to the person as to why they're in the situation they're in. I don't think this will be the only approach. I know there's interest in allowing churches or other social service agencies to have people park their cars or vans or campers mm-hmm. in their parking lots and then providing services. And we've tried that. We had one church that tried letting folks sleep under their covered porches with porta potties, and we finally got a call from them saying, "You've got to come in." You notice you've mm-hmm. speaking to the
we
city,
invited them, but now you have to do.
But now you have to tell them to go away.
Wow!
Because it was just unmanageable. Mm-hmm. This is a difficult problem, and. The word we got from the police chief last night was that it will not. This is not a readily solvable issue yeah. in terms of the full population.
That's only because you don't understand, Mayor, and you don't care about people. That's yeah. why you can't solve it, because you're non-compassionate and you're just a rich white guy. And
right.
you do not care about people. So that's the only problem
well,
that
thanks.
We have.
Yeah.
Yeah, the council. those are hard things to hear. I have a story from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I have a question
hard.
For you.
Yeah.
You actually touched on a lot of interesting topics, and I know you're going to be on vacation. Can we impose upon you to carry you over to the next?
Sure.
We're talking to Chuck Bennett. Talking to Chuck, Mayor Chuck. Not Mayor Pete. He's a different guy entirely.
He is.
Chuck Bennett is the city of Salem. There are a number of things that talked about that have been touching politics here in the city of Salem, and we're going to give you a quick briefing on that right after this. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Hey, Salem's listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Thank you, Rich Kansky. All right, back to Newsmakers. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Back to Newsmakers. Thank you, Dave. This is Brent DeHart, and we are talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett. There's at least a half dozen things to touch upon. Sometimes city council meetings are full of topics that are interesting, and sometimes they're really kind of dull and perfunctory. And
most of the time.
Gavel goes down pretty quickly.
It's always interesting, and I really recommend people watch it on CCTV if you want to get a flavor of what's going on with the city council.
I've told you the story, Chuck, before. We were on city council, and my cell phone was in the drawer, the little desk that you sit at, and
yeah.
it buzzed. And my family was watching this city council meeting at home on CCTV.
Nice.
And my kids, I mean, they had to be, you know, tweeners at the stage,
yeah.
you know, maybe 10 or 12 years old. I get this text from my son. It said, "Oh my goodness, Dad, how can you stand it? It's so boring."
Boring, yeah.
Of course, we're probably talking about like utility rate slopes or something just riveting. But
I get similar texts from my wife. Miss Bennett is often contacting me to quit fiddling with your pen. You know, look like you're wildly interested, or would you please tell them they're wrong or right or whatever? It's interesting.
Well, while we have you, let's go through the agenda yesterday and highlight some things and let people know what happened. We've been talking for months about an employee-paid payroll taxes. That moved forward, so that is going to be sent to the Salem voters. So the proposal's there, but the voters get to decide.
And right.
Will that be in May?
It's in May, and it's a payroll very small payroll tax dedicated to public safety.
There's a pretty good pro-con. I can't wait to see the arguments on both sides for this campaign, or if even if it's just in the voters pamphlet.
Yeah.
I think I could make an argument each way, having listened to Brad Nanke, who opposes it, makes a very rational argument about people being taxed who don't have an opportunity to vote on it.
That's correct.
On the other hand, there's an argument about people really having creating a demand for city services that do not contribute to the upkeep of the city.
Yeah, right? I don't think people realize 60,000 people commute into Salem every day to work. So it's a huge population that comes in who need fire, who need our EMTs, who may need our police services, or be caught by our police services traveling too fast into town. They have parking they use. They have other services that are used. They use our streets and water and sewer and the rest of it. So there is, I think, there certainly is a case. I felt very strongly that had to go to the voters. I felt the other issue, the rate payment on your utility bill, also should have gone to the voters. I tend to believe if you're going to tax somebody, you ought to ask them first.
Right.
All right, so you will be voting upon that in May if you live in the city of Salem. But if you're in Kaiser, not so much, right? In the city of Salem, you're going to be going for the primary anyway. At least the Democrats will be. I don't know how many Republicans, but hopefully all the voters will do their civic duty and vote. This caught my eye because trees are kind of a thing for people. And we've talked before trying to explain that when one government needs cooperation from the other, there's always the lawyers get involved and they have to create a document called an intergovernmental agreement. And this basically just allows ODOT to plant some trees.
And allows City of Salem to assist them in making sure there's tree plantings in some of our, like the parkway. I think the parkway was the part that was specifically, but when they're coming into the city, we'll often do an intergovernmental agreement. We have a program of tree planting. We plant thousands of trees in this town every year, and so we have a program that really lets us take advantage of the opportunity to add to the city's tree canopy.
How many trees do you have to plant to get people to stop whining about there not being enough trees?
We're not there yet.
Yeah.
Wow.
More than thousands a year?
We're not there yet. I can assure you of that. And there are parts of town, the north end of town really lacks a tree canopy when you look at a study of where the trees are in town. So there's areas of town that continue to need and want additional trees.
But isn't there areas of natural topography that doesn't have allow for trees?
There may be. We have not found that topography yet in Salem.
Okay.
It's a program that, remember, this is Tree City USA, and we really have for decades been involved in tree planting and preservation of our forest canopy here.
Yeah, we applaud you for that.
Well, that's the whole thing. I look at where Tree City USA, and we have a great canopy, and we plant thousands of trees a year. And it's not enough. I mean, I just want to say to the naysayers, like, how many trees? Give me a number. How many trees per year would be enough for you to think that we're making good progress and doing what we need to do?
I just assure you, we're not there yet.
And I think what the mayor is saying, that he does, there is no number. It will not be satisfactory.
Right.
All right. A few things just were on the report. You guys didn't take any action on. This of some interest to some people. The Riverfront Carousel is expanding, right?
Yes.
And why? The carousel itself is not going to be bigger, but the building will be.
No, the carousel organization wants to add what they call the stable. And what the stable is going to be, it'll be kind of in front of the existing building, kind of in front and off to the south slightly. Off-centered, but it's for the carvers, and it's a place, there's a substantial amount of work that goes on there, a large number of volunteers who work on carving new and different horses and other characters that become part of the carousel itself, and a chance to display as well as kind of an educational portion. A lot of students come through there to watch watch the carvers, who again are volunteers, and this is a place for them to work. It also is going to be on the front of it a location for the peace mosaic that was done over at the YMCA, which is coming down. In fact, I was over at Eichbach this morning, and boy, there were some big equipment tearing down the old YMCA today. If you want to see a lot of activity, you might go down by the Y. They're on Court and Cottage. Big equipment at work tearing it down. And the mosaic is being preserved and will be relocated then at the stable, sort of aiming out into Riverfront Park, which is just a fantastic location for it. And I just want to do a quick shout out to Lynn Takata, who's the chair of the Northeast Neighbors and one of the real driving forces behind the creation of the Peace Mosaic as well as its preservation. It's been very successful. They've raised a great deal of money to help relocate it. It's a really good thing. And I was really pleased we were able, with the stable being approved, to give the mosaic a really great location.
So are they expanding it towards the river then?
Yeah.
The backside?
Yeah.
So I'm visualizing this because I haven't seen the plants. There'll be like glass or plexiglass so people can watch the carvers at work and the painters and stuff. That's very cool.
Oh, it's going to be very interesting. I think people will really enjoy it. Right now, the carvers are kind of in a back room off the little store mm-hmm. that is operated there. This will put them out where you can really see them, where you can stop in, take a look at what's going on. It's a great great
and
thing.
Just make sure you pay prevailing wage when they build that expansion.
Yeah, right.
It's a little bit of an inside joke there. Okay, moving on. We don't have time for that. more good news. More good news. A lot of people don't realize that we've been talking about the 7-story hotel that's going to go up across the street from the conference center. Thankfully, to replace what used to be an eyesore in that concrete garage, which is now our parking structure gas station thing, which is now gone. It's a hole in the ground. And a new 7-story hotel needed to be approved because it's in a historic district.
That's right.
By the Landmarks Commission. Gavel came down on that last night.
Yeah, they approved it. And they'll be moving forward. That's a real hurdle when you're going into a historic district to get the approval of the Landmarks Commission that you have come up with a design that fits the neighborhood, and mm-hmm. it apparently does.
Sometimes that can it can be problematic because sometimes you get the most passionate preservationists that are not reasonable.
Well, we saw two or three attempts where the apartment building is being built at the old McMahon site that were unable to get through that Landmarks Commission process. And
they have a lot of power.
They do. It's kind of a statutory power to assist in their recommendation is real important.
Okay. Well, that's good news. So let's move forward. 7-story hotel. Hopefully that'll break ground next year. We get another crane downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Right? We'll move that crane one block down. That would be great.
They're starting to look like a big city with all those cranes.
Yeah. Could you explain why, in case anybody sees it, why the city repealed a plastic bag ordinance ban ordinance when they just passed it last year?
Well, it was passed last year in advance of the state taking the issue up. The state legislature took it up and passed a statewide plastic bag ban. So folks in Kaiser who have enjoyed, or Staten or anywhere else mm-hmm. that have felt like they've got something special going on because they still have plastic bags, say goodbye to plastic bags. It's now a statewide law that says you cannot have plastic bags and that you'll have to use paper or bring your own bags. And I believe you have to pay for the paper bag. I think it's a nickel.
Nickel, yeah.
Peace. Yeah, I can tell you as a former retailer, that does not cover the cost that Roth's and Safeway and Fred Meyer pay for that bag.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less than the cost the retailer has. And it's the more expensive option for a retailer.
Which is kind of weird because we used to get the plastic bags and the paper bags for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now they can't use the plastic bags and they charge you for the paper.
Yeah. Well, right. That was, as I recall, and boy, if I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will point it out to me. This was really, that nickel per bag really became an important part of not having the retailers really aggressively opposing this.
Their attempt to buy them off? What?
It's whatever. It was, if we get a nickel, we're okay kind of thing.
Well, I think it's twofold. And I'm, full disclosure, I do have a good friend who's a retailer in town and a former retailer, but it is two things. One, the ordinance would shift a lot of higher costs onto the grocer because most people pick plastic, and now they're going to have to stock up on a much more expensive bag. So you're basically shifting the costs of the public policy to the retailer. Mm-hmm. So that's one, if you want to placate them or look at it as buying off. But the second thing is really a behavioral modification attempt. It's like if it's going to cost that, and you're going to go shop for your family of four, and it's 10 bags, and you have to buy them all and so forth, because they want the consumer to come and bring the recycle. They want to use the cloth bag. And so,
forget it. I'm going to go in and I'm going to shop and I'm going to have a whole cart full of stuff and I'm going to leave it on the thing, check out, and come back and forth with my car and carry it piece by piece if I have to.
Good luck on that. Good luck on that plan.
That's my behavioral modification right there.
Yeah. That person behind you may help you modify that behavior.
I'd gladly ask them to help me carry it out to my car.
It's
Dave, one of
the things we heard last night, Brad Nanke shared, I think it was Brad, shared a discussion he'd had that one of the difficulties for grocers is people come in with all these different kinds of bags, and it's taking them longer now to load them up because the bags are different. So there's ultimately a cost in terms of time and then the cost of checkers that have to fill the bags and stuff like that. So there's costs. One of the things that did come up was there may be a misunderstanding. That nickel does not go to the city or to the state. It goes to the grocer.
Maybe we can get the state to put a law into the books that says what size and dimensions and the specifications of each shopping bag that you have, right?
Good
They're
going
to outlaw bags that don't fit that.
You're just a prophet.
I am.
Count on
it.
I'm sure.
What bags you can
use. I'm sure we'll see a bill.
All right, we're running late. We're going to have to take a break. Thank you. We're talking to Chuck Mayer.
Wow.
We're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett of the City of Salem. Stick with us. We're coming right back on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. We've enjoyed the last few segments talking to Chuck Bennett. It's nice
to
have him
here. A lot to update us on.
There were a lot of things about topics that we've been talking about all year long before the city council, and some good things that are just moving forward. One thing we didn't even get to was the approval of a cannabis processing facility in an existing warehouse. It's just interesting how that's not even newsworthy anymore. And you just go back a few years, and this was an illegal product.
It was approved or not approved?
It was approved. So it's a processing facility in a warehouse space. So that nowadays is nothing more than food processing, right? And it's cannabis in a product that was deemed a societal evil and illegal and this and that. And now it's like, oh, yeah, well. It's an industrial food processing facility.
Now it's a huge moneymaker.
Yeah, really interesting. In a week in which we see Marion County deny an application for one. But in fairness, we were talking about that during the break. The application for Marion County, it really wasn't in good order, as they say, in good order, and wasn't really ready to even have a permit. So I don't think there was a policy decision made there by the commissioners. I think just the application was not ready and it was not complete, and the person didn't even have the rights to the land.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, just a quick note about how quickly life has changed in America in terms of this topic.
Yeah.
And how open it is. And now, and we hear commercials on the radio with CBD, and it's just a completely different world and completely different social conversation So my mother is 89 years old. Mm-hmm. She's taken CBD. I know people who have been professional athletes. Well, they're talking and they're getting hooked up with national businesses promoting oils that do not have the psychotropic effect that marijuana is associated with.
Yeah, it's a natural product.
It's a hemp product, and it does have a pain-relieving aspect to it that is not addictive and so forth. So I know
maybe they should start making that hemp rope again.
Yes, indeed. It was a very, very industrial fiber.
Yeah,
that's great.
Why they stop making that?
All right. I don't have enough time to respond to everything the mayor was talking about. I'll share a couple funny stories, I thought. How about that?
Sure, okay.
So, this one's not funny, but I want to say it anyway, because the mayor is talking about how, you know, people who come in and want the city to do this about the homeless or for the homeless, and if you don't agree, then you don't care about them. You're not compassionate.
Sure.
And that's thrown around, and we're going to be talking about this more in terms of, you don't agree with me, then you are hateful or you're an idiot,
mm-hmm.
right? And one of these things. You're an ism, or you're a phobe, or you're an idiot. You're one of these things because you don't agree with me.
You could bring in 10 people into a room, and you would have 10 different solutions for solving the problem.
Yeah.
You could. And how as a city council, like, I could see their problem. How do you solve this major problem?
Yeah. And I mentioned it yesterday when I was talking about our Thanksgiving weekend discussion and how, you know, you can't label somebody who doesn't like Colin Kaepernick, somebody who doesn't care about black people, hates black people, racist or anything like that, because you don't know. I mean, because there are a lot of different reasons to say, I don't know, I don't like the way he communicated his message. So this one closer to home, folks. I was on city council, and there was a tragedy. A young child was killed by being struck by a vehicle part on the shoulder of a road over in Hawthorne. And I don't remember exactly. He was probably in the 8 years old kind of range.
Mm-hmm.
But he was struck with like a rearview mirror was coming by. He was really close to the road.
Wow.
And unfortunately passed away. Well, grieving people came to the city council and just laid into the council that they were racists. They didn't care about, because the boy was Hispanic, from an Hispanic family. It was Northeast Salem. And we sat there and silently took it, because you don't want to push back against someone who's in a grieving and emotional state.
No.
But it was a very difficult message to absorb.
Sure.
I had young children myself at this time, and the child was out, and the child was playing in the street, running across the street, unattended for a fair bit of time. And, you know, there's some responsibility there. It's not because I'm sitting here and I don't care about Mexicans. I don't care about Hispanics. I don't care about Northeast. And there's counselors that represent that area sitting there being accused of being, you know, it's a hard message to hear sometimes, and people get emotional. And the last one, the trees. The trees, I had to bring it up with the mayor because ODOT tore out a whole bunch of trees when they expanded I-5. And the tree people, the tree police people that can't stand to have one tree cut down in downtown core, they totally missed. They cut down like a massive grove of trees on the east side of I-5. They tore that down. So if it's for the road, it's fine. But if it's a tree is dead, that's not so fine. Funny stuff. Hey, thanks for being here with Newsmakers with Brent and Dave. I'll be back on Thursday. Tomorrow, Wednesday's with Denise.
And I will see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.